A little idle chatter about the people that we know. And though it doesn't matter, is there a different way of saying hello?
You're listening to a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To subscribe to this podcast, visit www.questformeaning.org or search for Church of the Larger Fellowship in the iTunes Store.
It's all about connections, tell you anywhere you go.
Good morning, you're here for another episode of The View. I'm Meg Riley, today in Beltsville, Maryland, just outside of Washington, D.C., here for the CLF board meeting today. And I'm joined by my cohorts. Want to introduce yourself, y'all?
Hi, I'm Joanna Fontaine Crawford, and I am here in still hot Austin, Texas.
I'm Aisha Hauser, and I'm in cooling Seattle, Washington, but it is bright and sunny.
And behind that chalice, we have Slim Moon on tech today. Latifa Woodhouse will be joining us. So I am going to introduce Latifa Woodhouse, who's here with us. She lives on Long Island as part of the Shelter Rock UU congregation there. And Latifa has been doing very powerful work for a number of trips now to Greece to work with the current immigration crisis. We were just talking about the movie about Wade Still and Martha Sharp, who were doing this kind of work in another immigration crisis. But Latifa, can you hear me? And can you describe, you've been going to Greece? Is that where you've been going?
Well, as you know, 10 years ago, just to relate it to this wonderful, amazing movie, we saw this movie defying the Nazis, the Sharp War, was called The Hero of the Spirits. And I was, Colin and I were serving as the regional coordinator for the service committee, and we saw it there. And we thought, wow, these are our Unitarian Universalist minister and his wife. They did this heroic work. They went to World War II. So how could we sit still and not do something of, social justice related and humanity related? So both Colin and I reached out in many different ways with many different causes like Katrina, Sandy, and of course through our congregation, we do a lot of social justice work. And we work with immigration and, as you know, our big General Assembly was in Arizona. So I was always concerned. Plus, being a daughter of a refugee, I know exactly my mother, father, grandmother, who was at the time 77 years old, with 15 brothers and sisters, came to this country as refugees. And the life that they endure and the hardship that they had, they were all living in one little tiny room in Pakistan, in Karachi, Pakistan, and their skin was totally shedding when they were there from the heat and the bugs and all of that stuff. So I know what it is like. But when really what motivated me to go to Greece, both Colin and I, was when we saw Alan Kurdi washed to the shore of Turkey, in September, October, was it? Yeah, it was October. And I said, wait a minute, this is really, something of a massive crisis that we have not seen since World War II. We must do something. So I went to my congregation, being on the Social Justice Committee and being on the board, I drew a petition and the board unanimously voted for. We took it to the congregation. The congregation passed it. We passed $200,000. 100 went to USC and 100 went to a group called SAM. Syrian medical professional in the border of Syria and Yemen. And that still did not say we, arrange meetings through our congregation with Chuck Schumer and many other, government people, but that didn't stop us. Colin was saying, we must go there ourselves. And, of course, we didn't have the means to really support the refugees, but we had the means to travel on our own and pay for our own hotel and stuff like that. So my kids came in to help, and they were wonderful. As young, adult children, I have five of them, and they did fundraising, and they did, through CrowdRise, raised about $16,000 in the matter of 3 weeks for us. And we took that $16,000 with a doctor from our congregation, Diane Lombardi, you know, as a team to go there and help. And my other daughter, who's very well connected with Patagonia, you know, they got 12 boxes of Patagonia brand new jackets to take to the refugees. So we took that with us and we went there with $16,000. It was an incredible, massive crisis that what we observed. You know, I'm lucky to speak Arabic, Pashto, Farsi, and Pashto and Farsi are my native languages, but Arabic, I speak a little bit and read and write, and Urdu. And that gave me a way, really an insight to their stories, to what these people were going through. In the matter of 3 weeks, I probably met and spoke to 2,000 people, individually and crowds. I mean, Camp Moria, we, Colin got us in through a HealthPoint clinic, which is based in London, their headquarters, and they were there on the ground. Originally, they were in the compound in Camp Moria, which is the largest camp of in Greece, and all the refugees from everywhere, when they arrive, then they ship them to Camp Moria for registration and for the process they go through. They're there for 3 to 4 days. After that, they send them. This was in January and February. They were sending them to Europe. And the two countries that were accepting them was Germany and Sweden. And, you know, we were giving them hopes. Colin got involved with a lot of construction work, worked with all the refugees, got them involved, built steps in Camp Moria, called steps. First he said steps to heaven, then he said, no, that's too much. We'll call it steps to Europe, you know. So these guys, men, women, children, yeah, of course, they had incredible, you know, heart-wrenching stories, but they were determined, they were hopeful, they wanted to go, and we gave them the money hand in hand, face to face, because we supported them with a firewood, with food, with clothing, and also with their tickets to Macedonia. So that was how we supported and helped. And we met a lot of other great organizations from Europe that they were working, like Team Humanity of Denmark, Act Sweden. There was another group, IMU, which is United States and Sweden, got together, a gentleman from California and a lady from Sweden. So it was a lot of wonderful, amazing people. My daughter Alexandra went with us and she was very helpful, and it was a great time in terms of helping and reaching out to these people and giving them hope. But what happened was in March 20th, when the EU closed its doors on them, first on the Afghans and then on the, you know, Syrian, then all the violence in you know, started, because people cannot tolerate the condition. This time in August, we went there again. My other daughter, Sarah from California, and my son, Evan here from New York City, they both went with us. It was a horrific situation. We went to 7 military camps, visited, helped them, provided them with food. We saw all kinds of conditions, scorpions running around, snakes running around, the heat 120 Fahrenheit, and these people, I mean, if you go, and they're still very, very incredibly hospitable, and invited us to their little tent in the heat, and would make us tea, and would spread the tablecloth with all the goodies, whatever they had, you know, the UN would give them these bars and these juices, and they would be offering it to us. I mean, talk about hospitality, talk about generosity. It was incredible. But what's not good, the conditions for their kids, especially we went to three different places: Chios Island, Lesbos Island, and also Thessaloniki. The Yazidis were really suffering because they have been tortured, as you know, by ISIS. And there was one camp, there were 1400 Yazidis and 700 were children. And these children were without shoes, beautiful, amazing. I mean, I have their pictures, you know, blonde, blue eyes. You couldn't even figure out where and my friend, come here, my friend. And they would hold your hand, and on each arm, there would be like 7, 8 kids. And then they would take us to their tents, and the mother would say, take them with you, please take them, save their lives. You know, we are in this atrocity, but they don't have to die here. They don't have to starve here. It was really, really something I have never, ever seen. And it was a great insight for my adult children to really firsthand feel and be in touch with, you know, these kids and play with them and share whatever they had for them, the markers, the crayons, the soccer balls, and, you know, just to get engaged. But the most heart-wrenching for me was I found my cousin that I left about 40 years ago. She was 2 years old. Now she's 42 in a camp in Chios with her doctor husband that she has married after I've gone. I've been living here for 40 years. And her two young children, one 9 years old and one 5 years old. And that was, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. We cried for hours. We took them out of the camp to our hotel. We stayed with them. We supported them with whatever we can. But there was no way we can get them out because it is worse than a prison. I mean, she told me at night they can't sleep. They're just sitting like this in a camp, one tent, 50 young men in her own family of two kids and one husband and wife. And the reason they left, I asked the story, was because the Taliban were after her husband. They were saying that you are practicing the devil medicine, you are a doctor, so they were going to, you know, kill him. He was on the list, and that's why they escaped. First, they were stuck in Turkey for many, many, many months. They had paid about $7,000 to the smuggler. That didn't work for them. They were living on the street in Turkey. Then they finally, the sister from Germany sent them more money, she said, and they got another $4,000 for the people to get them to Chios, the island of Chios in Greece. So, but that's like a minor story. I've seen people who have lost their loved one. You know, the Syrian ladies would cry on my shoulder and say, tell President Obama, what have we done wrong? I had a house as a castle. I had a car, a BMW, everything. The bombs came and took them away and took my husband. I don't have a husband. I'm running for the life of my children, and I've been here for 8 months. And look at my skin. I mean, it was just, Megan, what can I tell you? It's just, it really is heartbreaking. So it's pretty bad. At the time we were there, this one camp called Kharasu in Thessaloniki, they went on a 9 days food strike because, that's something the UN has to consider and be aware of. I have gone to the United Nations many times. I have voiced their concern. They say, oh, in September we have this conference, or this will happen. This was in March when I went there, right after my first trip. But the people, you know, are not getting what UN should be giving them. For example, food. The lines were like miles for a cup of soup or little noodles. In the catering, they said, we don't eat that. They told me, look, smell it. You know, it was like dry, yucky noodles with some kind of something on it. I don't know. And it's all packaged. And these people, you know, first of all, they are religious. They have their own, you know, they don't know what's in the food. Second, they don't like that kind of food. So what Colin and I did with this time, you know, we raised about $5,000 again through our children's help and through our donors. And we took that. We bought oil, rice, tea, sugar, sauces, and beans. And then, luckily, because this camp had a strike and people were really hungry and losing a lot of weight, there is an organization called Al Khair in England, and it's a Muslim organization. And they brought two trailers to the camp and outside of the camp. And they were, you know, any food that you donated, you would give it to them. They would cook their food, and then the people would come and get their rice and their beans from that source. Then we went to another camp. It was 4,000 people that we worked with them. We delivered a lot of clothes, shoes, and food again. And then we went and visited parks. The parks were full of people from Afghanistan, from Syria, living on the streets, on the sidewalks. We were harassed by the police. We had a special meeting with the police general, with all these 17 police on their motorcycles. And the people were crying to me that, look, my wife is dying right now. She has cancer. And they're kicking us out. We're just the reason. And the police said, well, tell them that. Why don't they go to the camp? They said, we lived 8 months in Athens. It was worse than any prison we've ever been. There was no fresh air. There were bugs. there's no food. At least if we come to the outside, we breathe the fresh air, and people come and help us like you guys. You know, they give us some food. You know, we see some other people. Look how we have met a woman from our country with our language. You know, they were all over me, like calling me auntie, we love you. Can you take us to America? Please take us. People were giving me their little babies. You know, a baby was 2 months old, and say, please put it in your suitcase. You know, my baby needs to live. It doesn't matter what happens to me. There were elderly people in their 70s and their 80s. So for all of that said, I think we have got work to do. That's why Colin and I were both, after, you know, we worked with the USC, we brought all the information back to them, and I'm very happy that they created this toolkit, and they also are, you know, trying to find partners, because we really, I mean, every congregation that Colin and I have gone, or the Jewish synagogues or the mosques, they have said, what can we do? How could we help, you know? And there are people willing. America is a wonderful place. There are a lot of good people, but we have to educate them. We have to talk to them. There are a lot of wonderful Unitarians. In one of the church, a lady who was 92 year old, a Unitarian, she came to me, she said, I want to go with you. I want to do that work, you know? So there are wonderful people out there, but we, our job is to create that education. Thank you for what you're doing, you know, to get the word to the ears of everyone, and to stand together united, and to make the social justice and social action work that we have got happen.
Latifa, can I ask you two questions, what it was like for you to leave and come back to the States? What was it like for you to re-enter Long Island? I'm from the Metro New York area, so I know Long Island well, and to leave all that suffering and then go back to Long Island where, you know, people complain about coffee and traffic.
Great question. It hurts my heart, to be honest with you, because the disparity is so great. And it bothers me, you know, when people say, oh, come on, Latifa, stop talking. We have our own problems. We have homeless on Long Island. What are you talking about? There is no comparison. There is nothing like that. So, but I've heard that a lot, you know, so I'm kind of used. But whenever I go there, to be honest with you, I'm on the high note of my life. And I feel like I want to be there. I don't want to come back here, because at least I could translate for them. I could, you know, by my translation with the police general and the police people, they were able to stay there. They didn't kick them out because they understood. I explained to them. So you need that. That's why at that time I thought to myself, and I spoke to Colin and a good friend of mine who's a lobbyist in Washington, D.C. She's African-American, that we must create Translation for Humanity. It's so important that we have translators for these people. That is more important than anything else, because they need the language skills and also to understand their culture, to see who they are. When I was in Camp Moria, in through these volunteer camp that we would be giving clothes and shoes, all these wonderful people from England, from Sweden would say, wait a minute, they are gypsies, they are thieves. We gave them clothes before, they're selling them downstairs. And the lady would cry to me and say, no, they don't understand my language. It was not my size. Here, I have the shoes back for you. You are speaking my language. You understand. You gave me my size. I'm not taking clothes from them. See, that kind of misunderstanding have to be clarified. And we must do that job to provide translation. That's what I want to ask you, USC. Translators are very important. And also lawyers are very important right now. They play a big role because of the legal problems that these people, like, for example, my cousin, she's been 8 months in this camp and living the horrific life. She was in Turkey for 6 months, and she's gotten nowhere. And in all her sisters, you know, we're all living here in America, in Germany, in Sweden, because we have come long ago. But here she's suffering because of what goes on with the EU and what's going on in the military camp situation. I mean, I went and visited an Afghan camp way on top of a hill, far away from any human. And they would walk for miles and miles just to get some food. But they are not allowed. It was like a dead place. And once they heard that I was there, I talked to their soldiers standing at the door with their guns and everything. And I said, I'm from Afghanistan. I want to visit some of these people. And it was ironic that the people that came and they just hugged me and crowded me, and they were people who knew my dad, who knew my cousin, because my dad was a big imam in Kandahar, Afghanistan, and my cousin, and they said, oh my God, we were his parishioner. You are the daughter. I mean, it's a small world. But they were like in tears. Can you please take us with you? Can you? So my heart goes, and I'm sorry that the people here don't understand that. But this movie, the Sharps movie that was shown the other night, and also the work that we have got to do as Unitarian Universalists, and right now there's a movement. And I thank Artemis Jakowski for doing this, because 10 years ago when he and I were talking, he says, Latifa, one of the goals I have, I want to put the UU faith on the map, and I want to show the world what the Sharps did, we could all do. We could walk in their shoes. And, you know, so this is a great thing that's happening in our country right now. I hope it catches fire and we all stand up together and stand up for the refugees.
Latifa.
Yeah, go ahead.
How is your congregation engaged now that you're back to Shelter Rock? Are people in the congregation jumping into this with you?
Well, not when I came back, but now with, you know how our congregation is, let's face it. Our congregation is very executive and very, you know, money, money, and status. Right now with Ned White being the, you know, interim minister, and Natalie Fenimore being the RE minister, and also this movie that Ken Burns took over, that it's in the New York Times, you know, and this person is writing, Nicholas Kristof is writing, and this is, so because they are from that kind of mindset people, they're intellectual, they're nice, but they're the money and the Long Island people, like she said it. So therefore, right now it's like, wow, This is really happening, you know, the refugees. So there's attention, like the movie was a big hit. The movie was really a big hit. And, you know, now they're paying attention to me, they're paying attention to Colin, and they're paying attention to my children in our work. But still, you know, we still got, you know, Megan, we have work to do. And there are strong forces there that we got to kind of be, you know, working with them and educating them in standing together. You know, what I loved that night, for all the people, except the hardcore were not there. They didn't even come, the ones that are fighting this movement and all that. But we were, as a congregation, together. The middle people were involved in this work, and I was very happy, and I just wrote them a long thank you note.
Talking about going to the White House to see the movie, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, you know, I'm talking about when they thought, well, the White House paid attention to this, the Holocaust Museum paid attention, the New York Times, the CNN. So, you know, okay, Shelter Rock will be at that level and will pay attention to this. And they have promised me that there will be more work done in October. We're going to invite Tom Andrews, and there's going to be another, because I told Ned and I told the board, this should not end just with this movie. We have to continue the dialogue, and we got to pour money into it. You know, I was laughing to Artemis. I said, you know, now the UUSC should ask for $20 million and pour it all into these camps, you know, because it's the right time. And it's the time that the United Nations is talking about, our president is talking about. So, you know, in Shelter Rock, as you know, there are great people there too, but there's also very corporate people there. So it depends on how you get those corporate people's mind to understand the pain and the suffering that these refugees are going through.
Well, your stories, I believe all three of the mothers on this show with you were crying when you talked about women with their babies.
Well, thank you.
Telling those personal stories is so important, so that it's not refugees, it's your cousin. It's people.
Exactly. Yeah, people. You, I mean, they all look, honestly, everyone that I talked to, they had my sister's name, they had my cousin's name, they had my brother's name, you know, and they look like us. We all look alike. You know, it's wonderful. It is such a warming feeling for me. I have never, to be honest with you, I said, you know, this is my religion. My religion is service, and I love to be there and be with them. And if I could make just a little difference in their life, you know, I feel great about it. And I couldn't sleep. I did not sleep for 3 weeks. At night, I would come home like at 12 o'clock, and all I would do is write back about it. And, you know, my mind is, until today, I mean, I hear right now, Camp Moria, the steps that Colin built there, you know, with all the workers of the, you know, you got the refugees involved, the volunteers involved. They built beautiful steps. My daughter painted it green, yellow, blue. And it was, you know, for the people who couldn't really walk and all that, they just burned them, the whole thing. The camp was burned. And the reason it was burned, because people lived there for 8-9 months. They're not going anywhere. The heat is incredible. You know, I mean, August, it was 120 Fahrenheit. And, you know, it's there day after day. There were young men. If my son told the story at the UU, this was a streamline, the UU congregation of community, about a young man. I mean, there were a lot of young men I saw, 20, 22. They, day and night is the same. All thank God to these cell phones that they have. And they are learning their English that way. They're communicating with the world that way. Otherwise, they would probably commit suicide, because these are intelligent, young, educated people who their country was bombarded by bombs, by, you know, this atrocity. And they have lost everything. And they're now at the mercy of these military camps. And they can't go anywhere. They can't do anything. There's no jobs. There's no education. Education is a key. You know, why can't we provide schools for them? Why can't we do things? The volunteers are a lot better than the big organization that have with lots of money. That's what my request from the USC is. We could really work on programming. You know, maybe we'll take 2 or 3 camps and provide them with schools, provide them with translators, provide them, you know, slowly but surely we can make a difference. The UUs have to be there, because I saw other religions, you know, there were the Catholics, there were the Episcopalians, but there were no UUs as a UU. You know, of course, I'm sure there's other UUs beside me who have gone as individuals, but we must create that front.
So if there is someone who has been watching the movie of Defying the Nazis and says, okay, I'm free, I can do this, I'm ready to hop on a plane, where do they go? What do they do? Who do they talk to?
Good question. Right now, we're working with the USC. They have found another partner called the Lighthouse. We went and visited them, okay? The Lighthouse will screen them, will give them application, and then fill in the space. We also, Colin and I, on our own, identify different organizations that we know, that I know firsthand. One is IMU, they're in the north of Athens, and the other one is the Team Humanity for Denmark, they're in Thessaloniki. ACT Sweden is in Lesbos. So it's difficult from here, but it's not that difficult when you go there and you connect and you know. The volunteers are always welcome, but you're right, we need an organized program for them. Like the Lighthouse is very organized, and UUSC did a lot of you know, search and findings and finally connected with them. So if a person wants to go, first of all, they could, you know, call us and, you know, and we could run them through our process of, you know, connect them with our teams that we have there on the ground. And we are also going again, you know, to work with these teams and help them and get to those camps. And the other way is to call UUSC and to say, you know, when are they really officially starting? I know they started the relationship because Pamela Spahr wrote to me and said, here, this is our, you know, organization. They've been working on it. In September, we're going to start putting people out there if they are interested. But so they could call the UUSC and ask them to connect them to Lighthouse.
Latifa, are you going back? Do you have plans?
Yeah, we want to go back, Colin and I and my children. Two of my children, and Artemis, sometime hopefully in November or December, and that we're planning. Right now, the plans have not been, you know, really worked on, because we just finished, first of all, we finished the trip to Greece, and then my daughter got married in Banff, Canada, and then I came here to promote the movie, so we had 3 successful weeks in New York City. And, you know, it was promotion in Los Angeles, in Chicago, everywhere. And now that the 20th, that was finished. So we're going on a little vacation, my husband and I, to Mallorca, Spain in October, and that first week. But then after that, we're still in touch with, you know, I have my very good friend, Arzo Wardak, who's right now there in Chios working with people, and she's helping a group of lawyers that win. You know, this is, again, a human rights lawyers from Manhattan, and they pay these interns like Arzo to take them as translators with them. You know, so if these organizations could do, and in the, you know, I talked to the lawyers, and they don't have much money. They put their own money or whatever the organization, they fundraise a little bit, and they send these wonderful young Afghan-American or Arab-American, you know, young people with them. They take them, give them a scholarship of paying their way, paying a little stipend, and they go and they translate, and then the cases could move quickly with the UN and through the, you know, EU, and get those people out as soon as we can get them out. But it looks like they're going to be there at least for a year and a half. You know, things were not moving when we were there. It was very, very slow. And people were pretty frustrated, and especially when it comes to young men. There were violence, you know, even in Chios. I mean, the stories that my cousin told me, that these young men from her tent, they go to the near, you know, they drink. Alcohol is allowed, you know, and they get drunk and they fight each other and they throw in the camp, you know, the chairs at each other, shoes at each other. She says it's just like a disaster that I've never seen, you know. And that's why they put fire to the other camp. You know, there's 4,000 people living in that camp, in Camp Moria. They put fire to it. So now we're doing fundraising from here, from America, to my friend Arzu and other friends that I have on the ground there to put these people in some kind of homes and also give them some food for at least a month or two.
So if you could make, wave a magic wand over every human congregation to take action, what action would you want them to take?
Well, I didn't hear that last part. It's again, the computer's not. What did you say? I'm sorry. If I were to take action?
If every UU congregation, mm-hmm. we're going to take one action now.
Right.
What would you encourage that to be? What would you think our congregation could be doing?
I think, you know what, if we all as UU act together and stand up for refugees, and each one, each congregation, let's say, adopt a family or say, I'm going to place one family in my house, I think we would make a big difference. Big difference. I'm talking about around the country, you know, because Charlie Clement just called me. I saw him at the congressional luncheon for the movie, and he and I talked, and he's one of the, I mean, I have lots of respect. He's a good friend. He's a wonderful, he was the president of the USC. You know Charlie Clement. And in his congregation in Durango, Colorado, they had meetings right after that movie. And he said, there's a synagogue, there's a UU church, and then there's another church. They want to adopt three families. So he was asking me, what would I recommend? How should they go about it? And all of that. So if we do, there's many, many families there. And we have to still work through some kind of resettlement organization, which UU Rise is doing that right now. And UU Rise, Dan Straka happens to be a very, very close friends. I mean, Colin and I got married in his backyard. I don't know if you know the story, but that's how far we go. So he is the head of UU Rise. And he has his resettlement organization in San Diego. And there are many other resettlement organizations. We got to work as you use together to bring these refugees, the Syrian, the Afghan, you know, one family at a time if we can. And you know, maybe my congregation will accept one or two. The other congregation is, you know, that makes a big difference. That gives freedom in life. Like I met these survivors and I met their children and I've been very good friends with some of them. You know, the potentiality that Ken Burns talks about. If we would have let those 6 million Jews, imagine what this country would be. If we let these Syrians, I mean, they're so bright. These Afghans, they're so intelligent. These Afghan women, you know, I mean, I was like taken away. I've been away from the country for 40 years. These were well-educated women sleeping right with a little blanket on the street. In so much like women's rights kind of people. And I'm thinking, my heart breaks for you, but I wish I could take you with me. You know, America would be beautiful if we bring them all here. So we got to work together, Megan. We got work to do.
Thank you. That's great parting words for our show. We really appreciate your work, Latifa, you and your family on all of our behalf. And sure, you inspire me to figure out what I can help to do for one family. Because if everybody had one family, that would be a lot of families we could help.
Absolutely, yes.
Next week, we're going to have Black Lives of UU with us talking about other moral courage. And we look forward to that. Latifa, thank you so much for coming. Joanna and Aisha and Slim behind the chalice, bye-bye.
This has been a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To find out more about the CLF, visit questformeaning.org.